Lies can be made to look attractive even if they're spoken in church.
Welcome to Mission 66 from the Bible teaching ministry of Pastor Luis Seau and TWR. John Matthews and Esther Sisulu have been leading us through Paul's letter to the Corinthians. If you have your study guide, then follow along with John and Esther. Let's get started.
Great to be with you again, dear friends. Today, our expedition is taking us through the Apostle Paul's second letter to the Corinthians, and we'll be looking through chapters 10 and 11. Paul had been unfairly slandered by false prophets, and for the good of everyone concerned, Paul needed to set things straight and prove that his authority came from God. Now, John Matthews, our teacher, will bring us the theme, In His Own Defense.
Esther, thank you so much. Great to be with you all for this latest episode of Mission 66. And if you've been with us through our look at Paul's letters to the church at Corinth, you'll know that one of the problems that he encountered was that while he was delayed in his desire to come and visit them, others had begun preaching a different sort of gospel, and they'd also taken over leadership positions in the church. And they were not helping, but hindering the work by way of false doctrines, claiming to be apostles. But the truth is that they were lying. And on top of that, they were making false accusations against Paul, saying that he was not really an apostle and that he was staying away out of cowardice. They even get to the point where they were criticizing Paul's appearance. And I don't know whether you're listening to this and you've ever been through a situation where you were falsely accused, but if so, you'll understand that sense of anguish. But more than that, Paul was really angry that the work of God, which he began the year previously, was in danger of being swept away by these liars. And so Paul, in his second letter, begins to answer these accusations in his own defense. And this is what he says in the first verse of chapter 10. I, Paul, myself entreat you by the meekness and gentleness of Christ. I, who am humble when face to face with you, but bold toward you when I am away, I beg of you that when I am present, I may not have to show boldness with such confidence as I count on showing against some who suspect us of walking according to the flesh. Verse 3, for though we walk in the flesh, we are not waging war according to the flesh. For the weapons of our warfare are not of the flesh, but have divine power to destroy strongholds. We destroy arguments and every lofty opinion raised against the knowledge of God, and take every thought captive to obey Christ, being ready to punish every disobedience when your obedience is complete. And so Paul knows exactly where the problem lies. He knew that people weren't really the problem, but what was happening in Corinth was a direct attack of Satan, who is using some of his hitmen to come in and spread dissension. And so Paul is saying that his prayers were of a kind that would have seemed like actual warfare. And we know that prayer is very powerful. And with our prayers, we can bring people's thoughts into captivity and obedience to the gospel. With our prayers, we can demolish demonic strongholds and bring down every lofty opinion that comes against the truth of God. Can you begin to see why every church ought to have this strong emphasis on prayer? Because when we desire for God's will to be done on earth, we are always under attack by the demonic world. But prayer enables us to neutralize those attacks. And Paul has more to say now in his own defense here in verse 7 by saying, look at what is before your eyes. If anyone is confident that he is Christ's, let him remind himself that just as he is Christ's, so also are we. For even if I boast a little too much of our authority, which the Lord gave for building you up and not for destroying you, I will not be ashamed. I do not want to appear to be frightening you with my letters, For they say his letters are weighty and strong, but his bodily presence is weak and his speech of no account. Well, let such a person understand that what we say by letter when absent, we do when present. Not that we dare to classify or compare ourselves with some of those who are commending themselves, but when they measure themselves by one another and compare themselves with one another, they are without understanding. You know, we ought not comfort ourselves by saying, well, I'm a better Christian than that person over there. Don't worry about that person over there. If you want to compare yourself with anyone, compare yourself with yourself. And you doing better in your spiritual walk this week than perhaps you were last week. And by the way, you know, comparison is destructive by and large. In fact, it has been said that comparison is the thief of joy. Verse 13 goes on, but we will not boast beyond limits, but will boast only with regard to the area of influence God assigned to us to reach even to you. For we are not overextending ourselves as though we did not reach you, for we were the first to come all the way to you with the gospel of Christ. We do not boast beyond limit in the labours of others, but our hope is that as your faith increases, our area of influence among you may be greatly enlarged, so that we may preach the gospel in lands beyond you without boasting of work already done in another's area of influence. Let the one who boasts boast in the Lord, for it is not the one who commends himself who is approved, but the one whom the Lord commends. And now Paul turns up the heat a little on his accusers and has more to say in his own defence as we move into 2 Corinthians chapter 11. I wish you would bear with me in a little foolishness. Do bear with me. For I feel a divine jealousy for you, since I betrothed you to one husband to present you as a pure virgin to Christ. But I am afraid that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your thoughts will be led astray from a sincere and pure devotion to Christ. For if someone comes and proclaims another Jesus than the one we proclaimed, or if you receive a different spirit from the one you received, or if you accept a different gospel from the one you accepted, you put up with it readily enough. Indeed, I consider that I am not in the least inferior to these super apostles. Even if I am unskilled in speaking, I am not so in knowledge. Indeed, in every way we have made this plain to you in all things. And so Paul is calling these false teachers super apostles with more than a hint of irony. Now, these guys believe that they were wise in their own minds, thinking more highly of themselves than they should have. And Paul goes on in verse 7 to say, or did I commit a sin in humbling myself so that you might be exalted, because I preached God's gospel to you free of charge? I robbed other churches by accepting support from them in order to serve you. And when I was with you and was in need, I did not burden anyone, for the brothers who came from Macedonia supplied my need. So I refrained and will refrain from burdening you in any way. As the truth of Christ is in me, this boasting of mine will not be silenced in the regions of Achaia. And why? Because I do not love you? God knows I do. In other words, Paul is saying in his own defence that he loves this Corinthian church so much that he did not even ask a salary from them, but was content with whatever the Macedonian church was sending by way of financial support. He also, as we know, worked odd jobs on his own to meet his own needs. We'll contrast that then with what these super apostles were doing, charging money for telling people lies. And Paul goes on in verse 12, and what I am doing, I will continue to do in order to undermine the claim of those who would like to claim that in their boasted mission, they work on the same terms as we do. For such men are false apostles, deceitful workmen disguising themselves as apostles of Christ. And no wonder, For even Satan disguises himself as an angel of light. So it is no surprise if his servants also disguise themselves as servants of righteousness. Their end will correspond to their deeds. So Paul's not trying to make friends of these accusers here, is he? He's basically calling them agents of Satan, masquerading as true apostles. You'll remember how John the Baptist called the Pharisees a brood of vipers. And even today, there are agents of Satan who try to infiltrate churches, hoping to cause dissension. But Paul says more in his own defense about how he had suffered great pain and loss for the sake of the ministry, which his accusers never did. Verse 16, I repeat, let no one think me foolish, but even if you do, accept me as a fool, that I too may boast a little. What I am saying with this boastful confidence, I say not as the Lord would, but as a fool. Since many boast according to the flesh, I too will boast. For you gladly bear with fools, being wise yourselves. For you bear it if someone makes slaves of you, or devours you, or takes advantage of you, or puts on airs, or strikes you in the face. To my shame, I must say, we were too weak for that. But whatever anyone else dares to boast of, I'm speaking as a fool. I also dare to boast of that. Are they Hebrews? So am I. Are they Israelites? So am I. Are they offspring of Abraham? So am I. Are they servants of Christ? Well, I am a better one. I am talking like a madman, with far greater labours, far more imprisonments, with countless beatings, often near death. 5 times I received at the hands of the Jews the 40 lashes less one. 3 times I was beaten with rods. 1 I was stoned. 3 I was shipwrecked. 1 night and 1 day I was adrift at sea, on frequent journeys in dangers from rivers, danger from robbers, danger from my own people, danger from Gentiles, danger in the city, danger in the wilderness, danger at sea, danger from false brothers, in toil and hardship through many a sleepless night, in hunger and thirst, often without food, in cold and exposure. And apart from other things, there is the daily pressure on me of my anxiety for all the churches. Who is weak, and I am not weak? Who is made to fall, and I am not indignant? If I must boast, I will boast of the things that show my weakness. The God and Father of the Lord Jesus, he who is blessed forever, knows that I am not lying. At Damascus, the governor under King Aretas was guarding the city of Damascus in order to seize me, but I was let down in a basket through a window in the wall, and so escaped his hands. And so Paul here is daring his accusers to show the people of Corinth what they have suffered for the sake of Jesus Christ. And the answer was not very much.
You're listening to Mission 66, and this is our study of the Bible with our teacher, John Matthews. And currently, we're in the Apostle Paul's second letter to the Corinthian church, looking at chapters 10 and 11. Now, before we continue, let me just take a moment to encourage you to follow us on Facebook and on Instagram. There you can ask questions and engage with our other listeners. And you can also leave a comment about today's episode. Just type in Mission 66 and be a part of the Mission 66 conversation. We look forward to seeing you there and interacting with you on Facebook and on Instagram. All right, John. Let's have a chat about this fight between Paul and the so-called super apostles.
Yeah, well, Esther, Paul is being ironic when he calls them super apostles, because they certainly weren't that. And in fact, you know, we don't know exactly who they were, but we do know that they were people who, after the church in Corinth had already been established, arrived and infiltrated the church looking for high position, and they'd messed about with doctrine, and we know that because Paul pointed out that they were coming with a different gospel, which was probably works-based instead of grace-based. That is, adding to the gospel things that were not part of what Paul had preached. And they were also puffing themselves up by accusing Paul and his ministry, claiming that they were the true apostles and Paul was not. And so Paul here responds strongly. He calls them liars and deceivers. And you know, there have always been liars and deceivers throughout the history of the church. False teachings, heresies, profiteering from the relationships with the people who are part of the community of faith. And Paul is ironic in referring to these men as super apostles. But these men really did consider themselves superior.
Interesting. You know, I actually recall you mentioning how Paul was criticized because he wasn't very good looking. Okay, let's unpack that.
Yeah, well, ancient tradition suggests that Paul was short, that his legs were crooked or arched, that his eyebrows were incredibly thick, and also that he was bald. And he also suffered from some unnamed thorn in the flesh. Maybe it was eye trouble. So you could say not physically impressive. And Paul didn't possess any super speaking ability. And so the super apostles, who were probably very good at public speaking, denounced Paul as being unsophisticated. But Paul was more concerned with speaking the correct gospel than in adopting the correct public speaking techniques.
I think that was a great way for him to go. That's why we have the gospel as it is today. Well, you know, John, Jesus made such a powerful statement when he said, if someone slaps you on your cheek, we should turn the other one, right? You know, I've always thought that we should just avoid an argument with people and let God be the one to defend us when we're being criticized. So why do you think Paul felt like he had to flame out against these men?
Well, we know that Paul, Esther, don't we, was not given to picking fights during his ministry. You know, he often bore insults without any retaliation whatsoever. But when the truth was threatened, as it is here, Paul then felt that he needed to speak in the defense of truth. And he loved these guys in Corinth, you know, and when he'd heard that the church was being infiltrated and misled by dangerous people, well, then he needed to say something about it. Remember, gentle Jesus, meek and mild, grabbing a whip and driving the money changers out of the temple.
Oh, yeah, I remember that. Well, chapter 11, verse 8 now tells us that Paul talks about receiving support from the Macedonian church, financial support, and about not wanting to be a burden to others. So how did Paul get his money?
Well, Esther, you know, he received, as you say, support from the church in Macedonia. And, you know, that's common today, isn't it? When churches support missionaries to go into other lands and spread the gospel. And wherever Paul went, he wanted to be sure that the gospel was presented free of charge. And this is what he meant by not wanting to be a burden to anyone. Back in 1 Corinthians 8 and 9, he talked about taking up a collection, not for himself, but to be sent as relief for those who were suffering with the famine in the region of Judea. Well, these false prophets were accusing him of taking that money and using it for himself. Well, Paul proved that that was a lie, and he wrote how the money was properly accounted for and was being delivered by these qualified men to its intended destination.
Yeah. And you know, it's interesting because Paul wrote that Satan becomes an angel of light. Wow. And this can occur even in the church.
Yeah. You know, he's describing here, Esther, how Satan himself can sometimes masquerade as an angel of light, deceiving people because he has disguised himself. And the context here is the lies and the heresies that were being spread by these false teachers. And bad teaching can deceive people. It can lead people into sin and away from the gospel of Jesus. And anything that's not in accordance with the word of God and not taught by our one and only Savior Jesus certainly doesn't come from God. So we need to be careful because lies, well, they can be made to look attractive, even spoken in church.
All right. Well, one last question, John. Paul, you know, when he runs down through his spiritual resume, it kind of looks like he's proud of his many sufferings and beatings and shipwrecks. Should we interpret this to be pride?
No, Paul actually was forced, wasn't he, to defend himself against the charges that were being put out by these super apostles. You know, they're saying that Paul's not spiritual, he's cowardly, he doesn't have the right credentials. And so Paul is really saying to these men, okay then, well, here's a quick summary of everything that I've been through so that you will know that I was called by the Lord and that I have suffered for the gospel, and this is how. Now, what about you? You say you're true apostles and you serve Jesus Christ, but what have you ever done for him except talk? And it might seem like Paul is boasting here, but actually he's just giving his credentials, and he indeed bore the marks on his own body as proof of the things that he had suffered for Jesus.
Well, this has been exceptional. I think right now we should take that time to summarize these two chapters, chapter 10 and chapter 11.
Yeah, let's do that, Esther. And our theme today was in his own defense. And really, it was pretty simple because the Apostle Paul defends himself against false accusations of false teachers who consider themselves super apostles, but in fact were super trouble. Paul wasn't so much concerned with his own reputation, but he was worried about the evil impact that these false teachers were having on the church there in Corinth. And the church, you know, is not a social club or a place to go on vacation. The reality is that the church is at war against dark powers, and we need to be vigilant and watchful therein and on the lookout for any who are misleading or do not want to glorify Jesus but only make themselves feel important and elevate themselves. And how do we fight the powers of darkness? Well, by living by his holy word, the Bible, and by the power of his Spirit within us, and praying for his inspiration in our lives and his inspiration through the preaching of the cross.
Well, thank you so much for that, John. And you know, the Mission 66 ministry receives responses from listeners around the world. And this response came to us from Valentina of Venezuela, who listens to Mission 66 on TWR from the island of Bonaire, and that's in the Southern Caribbean. And this is what she has to say. Good morning, brothers of Mission 66. God bless you. I'm so thankful to my Lord for such a wonderful program, and I'm listening to the studies of John, and I was very impacted by chapter 3 because I have family that believe in reincarnation and in past lives. I wrote down several things that were said yesterday in the study that will help me to clarify mistaken beliefs in reincarnation. May God continue giving you wisdom and knowledge of his word so that through the radio, you continue giving those tools to preach a holy gospel full of the truth of God. 1,000 blessings to you all. Well, friend, such beautiful words coming to us from our listeners. And that is what we have for you today. I hope that you'll join us next time as we finish off 2 Corinthians on Mission 66. Until then, goodbye and God bless you.
That's it for today's episode of Mission 66. But before you go, make sure to check out mission66.org for your free study guide. It's a great way to get more from the Bible and to see how it connects with your life. Cruise through the scriptures with John and Esther, chapter by chapter. Grab your free study guide at mission66.org and be all set for our next episode. While you're at the site, shoot John and Esther a message or ask them a question. You can also become a Mission 66 Global Partner with your donation, helping Mission 66 get to more places in more languages. All the actions at mission66.org. Mission 66 is a ministry partnership of TWR and Dr. Luis Seau.